Welcome back to The Deep Dive, the place where we take the world's most interesting research and make it immediately digestible for you. Today, we are strapping in for a really fascinating look at the cutting edge of sports science and technology.
We really are. We're talking about talent identification, or TID.
Right, and how deep learning isn't just replacing guesswork anymore. It's actually building a predictive roadmap for the next generation of champions.
And our source material for this is just a fantastic academic paper from an IE journal. It tackles a problem that's been around forever.
Which is?
Well, traditionally, TID relies so heavily on experienced coaches, on subjective observation, and then a bunch of physical tests that can be really inconsistent.
So it's biased, and it doesn't scale.
Exactly. And that leads us right to the mission of this deep dive.
Because the core challenge this research took on wasn't just, you know, does this kid have talent? It was something way, way harder.
Much harder.
It was, which specific sport is this kid most talented for?
Yeah.
And predicting that super early before they've specialized in anything.
Exactly. We're looking at data from entrance exams at two sports high schools in Turkey. We're talking 2,222 candidates, all between 14 and 16 years old.
And the paper points out that previous AI models just failed at this.
They failed miserably.
Yeah.
Your basic machine learning models, they just couldn't untangle the really complex nonlinear relationships you find in athletic data.
So those older models, they couldn't handle the messiness of it all. Like how a high jump score might interact with a coordination score differently for a basketball player versus a volleyball player.
That's a great way to put it.
It sounds like trying to navigate a three-dimensional map using a flat piece of paper.
That's a perfect analogy. They really struggled with what we call hierarchical data. It's where some performance metrics are deeply embedded in or dependent on others.
And if you force that onto a simple model,
it just breaks down. And that failure really paved the way for this novel solution. A robust two-stage deep learning system.
Okay, so let's break that down. Stage one, they call it TID1, admission. This part sounds pretty straightforward. It's a binary classification to determine eligibility. Basically, a pass or fail.
Yep, that's it.
So what kind of inputs were they using here to keep it objective?
For stage one, everything was strictly objective. All device-based measurements. 13 features in total.
Okay.
They used a device called Spark, for example. It's a high-tech system, sort of like FitLight, and they used it to assess coordination.
And coordination is so hard to score objectively.
Yeah.
How did Spark even do that?
Well, it put the athletes through this complex five-step track. We're talking balancing, quick jumps, carrying medicine balls, running a slalom course.
Wow.
And the device is timing and measuring precision through that entire thing. It gives you a really solid objective score. Plus, they use it for the 30-meter sprint.
Okay, so that's speed and coordination. What about raw power, explosive force?
For that, they used a jump bar. It's a vertical jump device that measures airtime and jump height.
Which is a great proxy for explosive force and anaerobic capacity.
A fantastic proxy. And then they added one more thing, rhythm scores. Candidates were tested on their ability to perceive and follow rhythms, and they got a score out of 15.
That is a really interesting mix of metrics.
Yeah.
And the model for this first stage was a shallow deep learning architecture. An SDL.
Correct. And for this simple pass-fail decision, the SDL was absolutely perfect. It hit a performance rate of, get this, 98.85% accuracy.
98.85? That's incredible.
It's stunning. And it blew away all the traditional machine learning algorithms they tested against, like random forest or support vector machines.
A nearly 99% win rate in stage one is huge. It proves that objective, sensor-based data can do this job reliably. Which brings the obvious question.
Hmm.
If the SDL model was so successful, why not just keep using it for stage two?
Ah, and that is where they hit the brick wall.
Okay.
Because once an athlete is accepted, the question changes. It's no longer, are they good enough? It's, what should they do?
So you go from a simple pass-fail to a much more complex choice.
Exactly. You're going from a binary decision to a multi-class assignment. Football, basketball, volleyball, athletics, or a category for others. And that new complexity. The SDL model just couldn't handle it.
The complexity just exploded.
It did. The number of features jumped from 13 to 40. They kept some of the device measurements, sure, but they had to combine them with a massive amount of qualitative data.
Coach evaluations.
You got it. Coach evaluations.
Go on. Didn't you say the whole point was to get rid of human subjectivity? Now you're bringing it right back in? That seems like a step backward.
It's a great point, and it really shows the brilliance of their method. They had to make that subjective data quantitative. and objective in context.
How on earth do you do that?
So coaches scored athletes from 1 to 5 on 17 different criteria, things grouped under physicality, reaction, specialism, and psychological profile.
Right. But a coach's 4 out of 5 for physicality is still subjective. How does that become useful for predicting a specific sport?
This is one of the biggest innovations in the paper. It's inspired by a method called TOP-PSS. They quantified the subjectivity using a crucial weighting factor.
A weighting factor.
Yeah. So a raw score, say 5 out of 5 on reaction, is great. But that score is then multiplied by a calculated weight that's specific to the target sport.
Ah, okay. I think I get it.
Yeah.
So a 5 out of 5 for reaction is weighted way higher if you're looking at that athlete for football versus, say, for a track event like shot put.
Precisely. For football, that 5 might get multiplied by 1.5, giving you a strong weighted score of 7.5. But for athletics, which might value endurance more, that same score could be multiplied by only 0.6.
So you get a much lower score of 3.0.
Exactly. The AI is essentially creating a custom, dynamically weighted grading rubric for every single potential sport.
Before the athlete is even assigned to one. That's brilliant.
It is. It turned these subjective observations into 40 weighted numerical features that really reflect the demands of each discipline. But when they put all 40 of those features into that simple SDL model, it hit that hierarchical data wall we talked about. It couldn't untangle how all 40 pieces influenced each other.
So they needed a completely new brain for stage 2.
Hmm.
Which brings us to the core technical innovation here, the split combine merge deep learning model, the SCMDL.
That's it.
What makes this architecture so different?
It's specifically designed to handle this dense hierarchical feature map. The researchers figured that the relationships between the features were creating a kind of resistance inside the network, basically blocking it from learning effectively.
Okay, let's use an analogy here because SCMDL sounds pretty complex.
Let's do it. Think of it like a 40-person committee meeting. All 40 features are in a room trying to decide which sport a kid should play.
Chaos.
Absolute chaos. Yeah. If they all talk at once, the loudest voices, the hierarchical relationships, they drown everyone else out. You lose all the subtle but important inputs.
Makes sense.
So SCMDL says, we need order. First up is the SESPLA phase. It breaks the 40 people into 3 smaller, separate working groups.
You're splitting the features up.
Exactly. You scatter them across parallel paths. And this move, it fundamentally breaks the resistance of the latent hierarchical relations. It forces the network to look at independent concepts first.
So you're intentionally breaking the data's natural hierarchy so no single group of features can dominate the early learning. What happens next?
Next is the combine phase. After those 3 small groups have done their work independently, you don't just throw them back together.
No.
No. You specifically pair up the resulting output vectors in what they call a combinatorial layer. This step is critical because it forces the architecture to learn the interdependencies, how group A's output connects to group C's output, but in a very controlled, strategic way.
So you break them apart, make them work alone, and then recombine them strategically to figure out how they all relate right before the final decision.
That is exactly it. And finally, the merge phase brings those strategically combined outputs into a single flattened layer right before the final classification layers spit out the predicted sport.
And it worked.
It worked phenomenally well. It hit 97.4% accuracy in assigning the sports branches. And the other models, the ones without the split and combine layers, they only reached 88%.
That's a massive leap, almost 10%.
A huge leap. It completely validates the whole complex architecture.
Okay, a 9.4% jump in accuracy is staggering. The SCMDL is definitely the right engine for the job. But let's go back to the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Because even with 97.4% accuracy, making coaches evaluate 40 criteria for every single kid is a huge time sink. So the big question has to be, can you get that same amazing result with fewer features?
That was their next major goal. They weren't just chasing accuracy anymore. They were chasing efficiency.
So they tested different methods to find the most important features.
9 different feature selection methods, to be exact. They were trying to find that minimal set of data points that carried the absolute maximum predictive power.
And what was the winning combination? The one that gave them that balance of speed and accuracy?
The winning formula was the SCMDL classifier integrated with something called RFEDTC. It stands for Recursive Feature Elimination Using a Decision Tree Classifier. RFE is a method that basically asks, if I remove this feature, does my performance drop?
And if it doesn't drop?
It's gone. You keep eliminating until only the absolutely critical ones remain.
So what were the results of that integrated model?
It achieved the highest performance, that 97.40% accuracy, and a 96.6% on something called the Matthes correlation coefficient.
Which, for you listening, is just a fancy way of saying the model worked incredibly well, even when the groups were unbalanced, like having way fewer volleyball candidates than football candidates.
Correct. But here it is, the real aha moment of this entire research, the massive efficiency gain.
Let's hear it.
They achieved that peak performance using only 6 features.
6. Down from 40. That's an 85% reduction.
It's incredible.
I find it amazing that a computer can basically tell a coach with 20 years of experience, hey, stop looking at 34 of your criteria. They don't matter for this prediction. That could fundamentally change how coaches assess talent.
It really could.
So what were they? What were those 6 most critical features that the AI zeroed in on?
It's a fascinating mix of the device data and those very specific weighted coach scores. Well, the 2 from the devices were rhythm sense and the 30-meter sprint performance.
And the other 4.
Those were the weighted scores. 1, the weighted physical score for volleyball. 2, the weighted reaction score for football. 3, the weighted specialism score for basketball. And 4, the weighted psychological score for athletics.
Let's just sit with that for a second, because that combination is so powerful. It feels like the model isn't just looking for raw talent. It's looking for these super concentrated, specific indicators that are proxies for overall ability.
That's the insight.
Like, why would the weighted physical score for volleyball be one of the 6 most important predictors for any of the sports?
Because it suggests that the type of physicality that volleyball prioritizes, you know, explosive vertical power, high mobility, core strength, is probably the strongest single indicator of generalized physical literacy across the whole group.
So if you're physically great for volleyball, you have the foundation to succeed anywhere else.
That's what the data is telling us. And then you layer on top of that these very targeted needs. Reaction for football, specialism for basketball, psychological for athletics.
You're not just quantifying the physical, you're quantifying the mental and technical fit.
Precisely. And the SCMDL proved its superiority right there. It got to that high success with just 6 features. The next best model, Random Forest, needed 17 or more features to even get close.
The efficiency really is the killer metric here.
It is.
So what you have is this incredibly robust 2-stage system. You get nearly 99% accuracy for admission, then over 97% for picking the right sport, all while using a tiny fraction of the original assessments.
It's a genuine decision support mechanism for coaches. It frees up their time to focus on actually developing players, not just assessing them.
And it managed to do all this with a really impressive generality.
It did. The paper specifically mentions that gender was not used as an input feature.
A gender-neutral approach.
Right. And the fact that the accuracy was so high across the board suggests the model learned these deep intrinsic performance patterns for each sport, independent of the basic physiological differences between boys and girls in that age group.
That ability to generalize is a huge testament to the architecture they built.
Yeah.
So what's next? Where do you go from 97% accuracy?
Well, their plan is to extend the data set with auxiliary data from even more advanced devices, things like EEG and Kinect sensors to try and eliminate those last few misclassification issues.
EEG for brain activity.
Yep. But the most provocative idea they have for the future is to focus on what they call proxy features.
Proxy features, the ones that stand in for things we can't measure directly.
Exactly. They're looking for derived or correlated variables that can approximate characteristics that are currently, you know, unobservable or just really hard to measure.
So things like grit or coachability, that game sense that coaches always talk about relying on intuition for.
That's the idea. The ultimate goal isn't just to find the fastest runner. It's to create a mathematical proxy for the will to win.
We could be entering an era where AI can actually start to quantify the unquantifiable human spirit.
That is the ultimate potential of the system, turning intuition into measurable, high-leverage data points and pushing talent identification just that little bit closer to perfection.
A truly mind-bending final thought for you to chew on today. We've gone from subjective guesswork to predictive, efficient, deep learning models that are fundamentally changing the future of sports. Thank you for joining us on the Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.